Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock in the UK. Last week's show was done at 8 o'clock because my guest was in Sydney, Australia. This week's guest, I'm in London. I believe she's in Scotland, a place I have not been to since March the 1st last year, unfortunately, and where my family is from. So my guest this week is Lynn Pilkington, right, who I would just say I can't remember how we met. But what I can remember is I immediately wanted to get you on the show to talk about what comes next. Tell us a bit about yourself, Lynn.
Oh, that question. A bit about myself. I'm an accidental COVID entrepreneur, I suppose. My life this year. Yeah, and tell me at any point if you think my accent isn't understandable. I thought you were going to say there that you hadn't been to Scotland ever, but it was just since March last year. Last year, we all got done remotely. My background is in community engagement, inclusion, diversity. And suddenly we were all dumped remotely and we're like, hold on. Well, I was like, hold on. People want to talk about diversity, inclusion, mental health. How do we do that? How do we change? And as part of that, I was like, I should add good noise to this, I suppose. But also in the equality, diversity, inclusion space and inclusive workplace cultures, things that fascinate me around that and how we do that in a digital way, but then also recognising that we were in a pandemic at the time, which was some of the stuff which I feel is missing a little bit. And I have been doing lots of listening to your podcasts and your guests, and there's a few things I've been wanting to say perhaps in return. And my life has been a bit of a pivot, a professional, where do we go from here? Regroup, solutionize and rethink things out. And I suppose the moment that I guess I realized that was the day before we went into lockdown. I was sitting in the office and everyone's like, we never saw this coming. I was sitting doing my own like Lynn Pilkington Cobra meeting with myself being like, well, Lynn, like, how are you going to, like, what's your routine going to be? What resources do you need? Do you need ballet DVDs? And I, like, have the original COVID Cobra plan that I sent to myself. It's now on edition number 15 with 68 pages with appendices now. So my super planner and, yeah. That's I guess, how I got here since last year. And I'm not one of those people, and I'm, okay, that story sounded a bit too exciting and glamorous. It's not that exciting. But I'm not one of these people that's like, thank goodness lockdown happened and it's been great. It wasn't. It's been horrible. I live alone. It's been really hard. I've been making the best of what has been really hard. And by doing that and sharing that and rethinking the world of work, I'm determined to make the most of the opportunity for workplaces, humans and flourishing. And I am just disappointed it took a pandemic for us to realise that.
Right. There's a lot in there. I have taken time over the last month or two since we were connected, looking at what you do, what you write about and what you're passionate about. And I love your phrase about adding good noise. That was terrific. And not many people will have had 15 different plans with multiple appendices. And that in itself shows a form of diverse thinking. I was on a network call with the Liminal community, the We Are Liminal community, one or two who have been on the show before. And we had this conversation about basically around how to be more diverse in our thinking one of the questions we broke out into rooms about was along the lines of talk about one opinion you hold strongly that many people disagree with you on.
Oh, amazing.
And one of the guys of the four of us in the room, when it came to his turn to speak, said, I don't like the question. I'm choosing not to respond to it. My diversity in this case is that I don't want anybody to know my opinion.
That's amazing.
And in and of itself, that's a form of diversity. You know, right? I mean, you know, it's different when you're digital. I'm one of the people who put my hand up and speak. You know, did it in class in primary school.
So I'm that person. I'm the person in chemistry class who says, sorry, can I ask about that extra hydrocarbon? And everyone's like, oh, I thought I understood it until when asked that. So I think that's really interesting. Yeah, I'm the curious sort. And then when you find those themes and those threads and what your guests have in common, it tends to be the curiosity, the questioning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is, I have this concept called open leadership, and one of the four traits in it is curiosity.
Oh, for sure.
And so anyway, that's my rabbit, my stuff. You mentioned I'm really always happy when people say they've listened to or watched any of the shows. You said you've looked and you've got some themes have come out of that that you wanted to respond to, for example. So talk about that. You could talk about what you see next in the world of work, embracing diversity. What can we learn from you today, Len?
Goodness, did you not get from my intro? There's so much. That's the thing, like, we have so much to share. I love sharing learning, and so many people. I love that as well. But I've learned in the past year the growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know that was a thing because I'm a recovering perfectionist. I was the kid that was
sorry, I love that. Recovering perfectionist.
Yeah, sure, like, I got super into like creativity and failed it because I really wanted to just learn how to do life good and textbook it. I really badly wanted that ladder and I kept trying and it didn't really work out there. So something I wanted to respond to was last week's guest. Mm-hmm. And this was around adapting stuff to online digital spaces. And this is my, basically I've been in a year long equalities existential engagement crisis. And I get people find this stuff hard because I do it and I've done it for 10 years and I get it. I find it hard. And she mentioned that doing stuff online was just kind of the same. The content was the same, but it was online. And I think we're at risk. Well, I know we're at risk. If we do that, I get the virtual world gives us more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is coming at the exclusion of so many circumstances that people aren't recognizing. And that is both in current circumstances, like, for example, if I do a team building day all day and my night, if I live alone, all my socializing is online, it's a very different circumstance. If I don't have a garden, it's a very different circumstance for this pandemic, for what we're doing. So for me, sending a link is not enough anymore. Any online events or virtual get-togethers. And that's my biggest, the biggest reflection I suppose I've been having recently is around, we send a link as a substitute for facilitated spaces, events, participatory things, webinars. You don't know if you're getting spoken at. You don't know what the expectations are of the space. And I like to know expectations. I like an agenda. I like to know how to work it out and when I can go for a break and what and how I engage in that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, those diversities, a link is not enough. You can say, oh, it's okay if your kids come on camera. But how do we adapt that? So for me, the world of work and the world of learning, what's next? It's not just saying, oh, hey, we can do our coaching calls online. Well, it is, but it's also saying, here are the outcomes I want to meet in work. How that looks is so different. So when I ran an online course, it was about, okay, here's a topic I want you to research before you come, and I expect you to do the pre-work. Here's something else you can do while the cameras are off in this space. That's the thing that's been so sorely missing, I feel, from, and I suppose where I've kind of accidentally stumbled into edutaining my way, I'm willing to make a space a bit more creative and different and manage expectations as the netiquette, how we want to engage in that world. So that was something I just wanted to respond to from last week. Something else was swimming, how much I love there's so much in swimming and how much people of coaching and development and leadership that, I guess are just curious and really reflective and insightful themselves.
Oh, yeah. As you've noticed, I've had quite a number of people from the swimming community on the show. And possibly my role model in terms of curiosity is my dear friend Ian Armiger, who's one of the guests. He is constantly sending me things that he studies, reads, goes online about behavior.
If you're bored all day, you don't have to talk about swimming.
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, for listeners and people viewing this now and later, the guest last week was Vanessa Bennett in Australia, who runs Next Evolution Performance. And she's taken some concepts which were developed by her business partner, Alex Davids, years ago. I like making connections as part of Sherlaw's group that I was part of. Really, they realized they were working with people in business who were burning out all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you, this, if I simplify it really quickly, there's the expectation that if you think of, you know, between 0 to 100% effort and effectiveness, well, not the same thing, effort, what number are we expected to do all day long when we're at work? And the answer is 100%. And athletes don't plan their year, their season, their blocks that way. They plan them very differently. So the classic example is, how many people do you know get ill at Christmas on holidays? Let's leave the pandemic year out of it. Many, many people get sick as soon as the Christmas holidays come around because they switch off and all that carried tension they have in their body just collapses and they go, oh, I always get ill at Christmas. Or they go on holiday and they're just not present for the people they're with, the family or friends, for the first few days because they've got to decompress. And that was where Ness's piece around having 4 to 6 hours of cognitive energy came in. The interesting thing is that's not just, I was talking to a client about this on a walk this week. It's not just the 4 to 6 hours at work. It's, you know, one thing we're learning from the pandemic is that work and life and are all the same. So if you are not living on your own and you've got 4 kids around you, right? And, you know, and a partner or spouse, and you work all day long in your office and the kids come back from school, because in England, the kids are back in school now. How much cognitive energy have you got left if you've been 100%. Trying to burn it up and then you sit at the dinner table and you're not there? I mean, I know for myself, years ago, between me and my boy's mother, we're both working really hard all the time, right? That recovering perfectionist you talk about. And so we were in an environment where you always had to pick the kids up after school. There was no public transport and stuff like that. So you would be picking the kids up from school, but you were like a non-communicative taxi driver.
Yeah.
Right. So you're just not, you don't have that cognitive energy. So, you know, that's a piece. And just what you're, you know, what you've got your, the tricky bit about all of this is that there is no one way to communicate anyway, and you work as a facilitator, and I've done that. And so what might work for Vanessa's audience wouldn't work for you. You'd want people to do lots of stuff. And I'm realizing my cognitive bias is that I've moved from being a very structured thinking planning person over the years massively to I've swung the other way. So if you were to show up for a 2-day retreat I was running for a leadership team, you would get a 2-word agenda from me.
See that? Yeah. Historically, I'm a facilitator steered for the space. However, I did some work with a colleague who is a really good facilitator. And in the opposite way to me, he's a very good space facilitator. And I'm a very good, I'm on facilitator. And I have to remind myself, last year I was training to be a psychodynamic therapist as well. So I've learned the purpose of silence, and you did mention you have to look back to go forward. So I have 13 years of therapy that I've done and done some training to be a therapist. So I kind of have worked that story out and what that space is and what that container is. Mm. And I think the theme of the container is so important to help you make sense of what COVID is, or the work-life balance you mentioned there, or the life-work balance, or the integration as we now know, the way it's going. This sense of container, I am not going to work, then what is that? Is that space, that transition, the air walking between, is so, as we get those different hats on. And another thing I remember, and I briefly interrupt you to say, I wasn't, again, having beef or whatever, not a glass of the term, I wasn't having a go at your last guest. I was merely reflecting on the point that it's, we are showing up to spaces, but we definitely need to give thought to how that content is being translated and what's the expectations of the spaces we're in. And the hybrid world of work as we go forward we all know, we all originally went on for, like, I just can't believe that we are still doing cameras on day-long things.
Yeah.
When we recognised, like, a year ago, hey, that didn't work. But we were lacking the blended way of what that is. And I remember the other thing I was going to want to chat to you about was the flow. You mentioned the flow state.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened to me today. And I want to ask you a question. I'm interested. How does one remember to come out of a flow state to go for stretch breaks and walks? This keeps happening, right? I keep sitting for like 3 hours and I'm a fidget. And I walk around the block like 4 times a day when I'm in my day job, like to do like before meetings, after, to get the space. Just I stand up, I do my stretches. If you're in flow state, you forget. So all the floors, are you meant to put a buzzer? And then you're like, oh, I just want to finish this web tweak. And then I'll... So I was trying to stop beating myself up about it. And because my therapist said, if it's meaningful work, then you're doing the things that are mean. But then you feel bad because your physiotherapist is like, Lynn, have you taken a 10-minute break every hour?
Well, if I link it back to the work that Vanessa and Alex did around what they called inside 80 performance, and the idea was to stay inside the 80% zone all the time, right? So if you think about exercise, there are things like red zones, orange zones, yellow zones. And they've now launched in the UK, there's a very analytical workout program called Orange Theory, right? Which is basically, you never want to be in the red zone. You never want to have your heart rate in the red zone. So around all of this, it's also working out, how do you work? What works best for you? So if you're somebody who has to punch out 300 emails a day and it's task oriented, there are time management things like the Pomodoro technique where you just like set your alarm to the time of 20 minutes and you get up. I'm old enough that when I was studying at university, I had CDs and LPs. Now LPs were becoming an old thing, but I used LPs when I studied because the length of an LP side is 22 minutes.
Oh,
you know, so when you're in a bit of a flow state, you could put on your favorite album, right? And you remember putting the needle down. You don't remember the side finishing. You don't remember any of the side, but you do just, and I would put my turntable on the other side of the room. So I had to get up and turn it over. All right. And just that 30 seconds was enough, but it's these, if you think about artists, in fact, I was just listening to a podcast before I spoke to you from one of my favorite ones from the Irishman David McWilliams, who ostensibly is an economist, but basically a really curious guy about the world. And he had one of the founders of Stripe on there, which has now been valued at 95 billion. And he's an Irishman, right? A couple of brilliant Irish dudes. And with a guy called Stephen Kinsler, who's a professor at University of Limerick, which is a very innovative place. And I know Stephen. He's also, if you get him to have dinner with him, he's one of the funniest people on the planet. And his wife's even funnier. So the combination of them just, my stomach hurts just thinking about that evening. But what they were talking about was getting people to be, you know, software engineers to be innovative. The key bit I was listening to, though, was that, I forget his name, but the guy from Stripe, what he was basically talking about was that state you get into from like 9 o'clock at night till 4 o'clock in the morning where you just sit there and develop an idea. And the fact that you can then turn that into something very quickly compared to an architect whose building doesn't get lived in or worked in for years, right? So, you can architect a piece of software, then you can engineer a piece of software, and in a matter of weeks, you can have paying clients. So my answer to how do you, you know, as a coach, if you say, how do I get out of a flow state? That's a consulting answer. A coach would turn around to you and be really irritating, a bit like a therapist, and they'd say, why would you want to? Why do you feel the need to do that?
Exactly. And that's the thing, like, because there's been so many ways, and that's part of my lockdown plan. And this is where I suppose it really helps being aware of yourself before we came into lockdown, and that was an added, although there's so many other challenges, that if you're aware of yourself, if you're having conversations with your manager about how you are, how you work, and you're aware of it, it was just an extension of that. And that's where I found myself, when people coming and having these conversations in work, and they had these big divides before, and it was like, I've never had this conversation. Whereas if you can do the pivot and say, oh, I'm quite open about the way I work and the best, and for me, one of the most fascinating things is that with humans, we don't come with access statements saying, this is how we do it. And when I used to work in a college, we'd have learning support plans, which were personal learning experiences for students. You became a grown-up, you worked 9 to 5 at a desk, you know? Mm. And that's not a criticism of the culture, because there was loads of good stuff going on and loads of good work. But why? It's grown-ups, and you know this. Like, why do we suddenly become uncreative or unflowy? Or how do we stay in flow? And I suppose for me, that's where there's such an active need to care for each of those needs, whether it's your eye strain breaks, you have to look up for an app for a reminder. You have to have a reminder to then be like, what's my social needs? Have I been on a walk? You have to go through all those different needs and set that up. And for me,
well, one of the things you're talking about is, you know, how are we going to work when we come out of this? Mm-hmm. And how are we going to embrace difference? And how are we going to not drive the creativity? Children are creative, primary school kids are creative. You've worked a lot in this space, but we put people in a box and make them work 9 to 5 and make them work all the same way and go back to the office. And for me, I look at it as very high level. I go it's about having a fear-based mindset. There is a growth, you know, as Chip Conley would say, a growth mindset, you're looking to improve. And if in a fixed mindset, you're looking to prove, your ego is saying, this is the way, right? So one of the most brilliant people I've heard of in the world is a guy called Josh Waitzkin, who mm-hmm. was the subject of the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer. He was the chess prodigy.
I watched the one.
He did that for 10 years. And then if you listen to any of his podcasts with Tim Ferriss, they're quite amazing. But one of the things is the way we see success or failure. So one of my early guests was Chris Vanderkyle, another Scott. And he said, how would you revolutionize education? All right. And he said, I would have part of the metric that school inspectors use every year is that every teacher has to try something risky every year, something that might not work. Right. And trust the teachers. They won't do anything that endangers the children in any way. They're trained professionals, but they have to do something that they feel it might not work, that is different, that is stretchy, that is scary. And the way he put it was that if it does work, let's learn from it and do more of it.
Right.
If it doesn't work, there's even more opportunity to learn.
100%. Right?
So one of the things that Josh Waitzkin talks about is investing in loss. So, you know, what if we learn to love risk, our stretch point, the pain that comes with having our weakness exposed? So if one person gives you negative feedback, instead of hating it or them, you view it as an incredible gift. I mean, talk about a reframe, right? So basically, we have to see loss, getting it wrong, losing something, losing money, losing prestige, losing ego as an investment, as an activity we associate with winning in the long term.
Oh.
Right, so... Nice. That's just a thought around. So in order to change the paradigm as we come back into this is quite simple. It's make organizations human first and just say, but with the boundary, you talked about boundaries with containers is word you. So we have to put the organization has to have its own priorities. And, you know, there is a certain amount of work will need to be done. There are certain outputs need to happen. But in order to happen, you know, you get paid because you create outputs. But in order for that to happen, you just visually, you sort of pointed to a target and wiggled your hand, right? For the audio listeners. But if you drew it like a business art puzzle, like another Scott Hugh McLeod of Gaping Void might write, you know, it would just be a whole bunch of squiggles and they're all going to get to the same destination. Hmm. So how do we facilitate that? There is no one answer to it, but I think what we need is people asking those kind of questions like you are and adding good noise to the conversation.
Adding good noise for sure, because you mentioned there about diversity and inclusion, and this is where I realized that probably my USP one, I guess one of many, can you have more than you know, but
I'll challenge you. You can only have one USP.
that's in like that's whatever many existential crises down the line, but like the fact that stuff doesn't have to be scary, the fact we're asking the questions, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I was listening to a lot of work with Renee Brown and everything, and she talks of the being vulnerable, the saying, I don't know everything about this, mm-hmm. but I'd really like to learn. And in the inclusion community, by showing up with Black Lives Matter or with anything, mm-hmm. I have so much time and respect for people who might not know it yet, or might be, and again, the historical one with me is, Lynn, can I say that? And I'm like, you can say whatever you want around me. I would ask you choose some things out of respect, out of, because some things are hate crimes, but you might want to choose your language to create good impact. And I'll help you do that. But also I found over the last year, not having those answers for me is so hard. But this is an ever-evolving, complex, messy landscape, and it terrifies me to think, because if we do look, yes, it's normally white men that are that lead the change in this way. And if we marginalise them and make them too scared to even open the conversation and say, can you help me out with this? Can I run this by you? Is this toxic? I was just thinking there of toxic positivity as well, because the whole thing about emotions, and I've been really trying to teach myself to lean into distress or negativity. Hmm. Like the loss there, because if we just keep telling ourselves it's an opportunity for growth, it's an opportunity. When do we know it's an opportunity to grow, and when do we just say, hey, it's really bad and I'm going to let myself feel really bad? And I think we're scared to do that, because that as well needs to be boundaried and contained and mourned, and that's the bit of being an adult.
You are showing up as a cascade of questions about the meaning of life. and it's brilliant. It's brilliant. You've just got, it's funny. I was just exchanging some voice notes on WhatsApp, and by just saying that, somebody, you can tell the generation of the person I was talking to is younger than me, right? Mm. Although I'm adopting that. And they were looking for some support on something, and my voice notes, they said, oh, I can see why you do what you do. You're so calm and grounded and all of this. But actually, if you ask people who know me really well, and on this show, it's a bit of both, right? I'm just a bit like you. I'm Tigger, all right? I'm just, except when I'm not, and I'll just share something. It's like, you know, this is, today was the anniversary of when I locked myself down, and I was on my own for 3 months completely. Mm. And leading up to that, I didn't even realize. I just felt really crap for a couple of days. And I'm Tigger, right? I'm normally bouncy and all this stuff. So just, you know, being able to sit with it and not, you know, non-judgmental state is that's one of the big challenges for me. I mean, I've got one, found somebody very, very dear to me who has got a big, big community online. And they are only taking, they're propagating noise against vaccines and against lockdown, right? And I'm thinking, the judgmental part of me goes, that's terrible, mm-hmm. right? They're not thinking about other people. They're being fear-driven and selfish, right? And I'm really, really trying to understand and see where they're coming from. And I didn't post on their social posts. I stopped that, but I engaged with them on messaging privately, and it's difficult, but actually it's, you know, if we can take that into organizational stuff and leadership and businesses and just go, right, if somebody's on a call and they just don't want to talk, you know, mm-hmm. and expecting people to sit with cameras on as if you're in the room in a meeting all day long, you know, it's, you know, and seeing, you know, people need to evolve. I facilitate for a medical charity in Canada every year. Last year, I had my tickets. I was literally flying to Toronto to do it in May. Of course, then I wasn't. And we decided we'd do the whole thing with the same agenda and the same schedule online. This was 5-6 weeks in, right? The epiphany for them all was how powerful breakout rooms were compared to sitting at four tables in the same room. And that was really powerful for them, right? What's brilliant is that we're setting up to do it again this year in 2 months. It's much, much shorter this year, and much more of the work has been done in advance. Much more of it is broken off into little groups because they don't have to all fly into the same city across a huge country. And so there are ways of doing it differently and respecting diversity of all kinds. And there's some people, I'm about to write a post about an incredible furniture company that I bought a bed frame from. And their customer service was beyond brilliant. And I said, here is me setting my own beliefs and biases, my heuristics in there. And I'm going, let's get on a video call and we can talk about your business and your family business. And then I can write about what amazing experience I had with you. And they said, English isn't our first language. Can I write a story to you?
No, amazing. See?
And I went, brilliant. Actually, excellent. You know, and you know, would you like a picture of your family on the blog, or right. Perhaps you don't?
Meeting them where they're at.
Just respecting difference, you know?
Giving the question. What we've learned, people are going to show up differently and we can't divide that. So there's so many lessons in it, and a big one has to be as well. Like you mentioned, we all were dumped in the same situation at the same time. And how we pivoted, we responded. Like for me, the best thing is just saying, I don't get it either. I don't know, but let's work it out together. And that is such a space for leadership for me right now. Just being up front. I'm struggling. I don't get it. Anyone got ideas? I'll think about it too.
Yeah. The one of my favorite short talks of all time was given by my friend Chip Conley. And I don't think I can even find it on YouTube anymore. But he's written about it a few times about a decade ago. And he talked about the power of being a vulnerable visionary. So if you're vulnerable but without confidence in the sense of direction, it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to follow that, and they're all going to go, whoa. But the example I use again and again is this chief executive of Microsoft. And one of my characteristics of open leadership is to be humble. Most people don't know his name. But if you said, who was the founder of Microsoft? Everybody goes, Bill Gates. Who was the next CEO? Most people go, Steve Ballmer, the guy who used to pound a desk and yell about his competitors. Yeah, right. And during Steve Ballmer's 10 years, the share price dropped. Right. Microsoft is massively successful now. And nobody knows the name of the CEO unless they're really into studying leadership. And his name is Satya Nadella. Right. And one of his favorite lines is to say to people the words, I don't know. What do you think? Right. So you'll say, Bosch, what should we do? There's two ways of delivering that line. Well, there's many ways, but you can go, I don't know. What do you think? Right. Which is I have no clue. Or there's Lynn. I don't know what the future of work looks like. Mm. What do you think? Which is really, as you can pick up, but I'm saying it out loud, is hopefully how that shows up is I've got some really clear ideas on how it might look. I'm confident that there is a future and we can work it out together. And I really want to find out what you think.
I want to involve you.
I want you to feel you belong. Belonging is my favorite word now around diversity.
Yep, but you know, it's a good one. We've added that one as well.
So we've gone over time with your boundless enthusiasm.
I know, classic Lynn. Sorry.
Never apologize for who you are. Right. So, and I guess my one thought would then be, I always give my guest, or almost always give my guest the last word.
Really?
Yeah. So, unless you don't want to be put on the spot.
No, I'd rather not. I've said enough. I'm a rambler, not a sound biter.
There you go. You've just given me a learning, which is that I have a way of doing it which suits my style. Right. And I can't be all things to all people. My USP is, or one thing I know I enjoy doing, and I'm told I'm reasonably good at it, is being in one-to-one conversation with people. Okay. And, but actually putting a frame around it that suits me, is not respecting.
You managed expectations. We all knew it was apart from the last bit.
Well, where can we find you, Lynn? Because you have many different directions and things you do. Where can people find you online?
Really originally, lynnpilkington.com. I know. Got that domain. Lynnpilkington.com. On that are the links to the social channels. Got the LinkedIn, Instagrams, Twitters. And I've got a wee newsletter, which I just kind of throw out now and again. I do the things that people do when you start a business, right? And I'll work it out as I go along.
Okay, and we don't have time to talk more about it, but you just put a couple of book reviews out there. So you talked
about my project.
Another conversation, but you're talking about Delivering Happiness, the Zappos story. And I think that's another interesting piece is that people go to America. Every woman in America knows who Zappos are, right? But they that story has not made it across the Atlantic very much, you know?
So one of them was so tragic.
It's very cool. Anyway, another day. So we've run out of time.
So many common interests.
So I will shut the stream down now, and then you can stay exactly where you are, and I can talk to you after a minute if you want.
Okay.
Okay. It's a pleasure, Lynn, and people can find you at lynnpilkington.com.
Yeah.
This has been What Comes Next Live.